direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
We started to talk to Sandy Gonzalez, and all manner of technical things intervened, and I said, no, this is too important. We're going to reschedule it and start from the top, and so as promised, here it is. Now, if you don't listen to me too often, then you're not aware of the House of Death. If you do listen to me regularly, I'm going to assume you know exactly what it is, but let me put it to you this way. Let's say you were a civil servant, you were a career law enforcement officer, and you discovered that an informant who we were paying a few $100,000 was in fact murdering people. Now, I'm not talking about we find out about it after the fact. That happened, say, the first time. I'm talking about the other dozen times when we have foreknowledge. What do you do? Now, I think regardless of what your answer is, the thing that you don't do is continue to pay this guy to go murder people. But that's exactly what our government did. Now, with that in mind, when you, as a career law enforcement officer, make this discovery, what do you do? Well, I think it shouldn't take you more than about a picosecond to say, well, I go to higher-ups and I rectify the situation. I let people in charge know what's going on because clearly we draw the line at murder in America. You know, there may be things that folks do who are in positions of power, but clearly our government wouldn't condone us paying somebody who we knew was going to go murder people, would we? And, of course, as I say, if you listen regularly, you already know that answer. And the answer is what you'll do. You will absolutely tarnish and vilify the whistleblower. That's what you'll do. And that's exactly what Sandy Gonzalez went through. Firsthand, up close and personal, single-handedly, too. No fewer than dozens of names you would recognize, including Johnny Sutton, were in on this plan, thinking that it was just okay, fine. But we'll review with Sandy exactly what happened with House of Death, exactly what happened to Sandy for blowing the whistle, and where we are now. Do you think this could not happen again? Well, we'll ask you again at the end of the hour. But in the meantime, let me mention something here before we get back to it. I want to mention the Sea Crane Company and a catalog that is just terrific. You will find something you'll be saying, I got to have it. And maybe it is something, let's talk, assuming you have a broadband connection for a minute, like a cable or DSL modem. Have you picked up on a Wi-Fi radio yet? Oh, you should. You know, many of the things that we talk about on this show, people will say, I don't hear this on major media. And that's true. But the reality is there are dozens of shows where you will hear conversations just like this. And if you have a broadband connection to the Internet, you already know what surfing the web will do for you. But did you know that there are over 16,000 streams online that you can listen to on a radio? Now, certainly you could sit in front of your desktop and be chained to the desk all day, and nobody's going to do that. Or you could sit in front of your laptop and find all sorts of things and listen through those tinny speakers. Well, of course, finding all sorts of things may be difficult, but assuming you could, very few people are going to be dragging the laptop around. But what if you could do it on a radio, just like an AM or FM radio, only this one's magic and it picks up every stream online? Actually, it's not magic. It's fairly simple technology. But you would find that the things that we're talking about are available all over the place. I want you to go to ccradio.com, ccradio.com, and read about Wi-Fi radio, how it works, and all that. All you have to have is the broadband connection. Then you have to decide what Wi-Fi radio to get. And I highly recommend the CC Wi-Fi for a number of reasons. For one thing, if you have a wireless access point, this radio will pick it up no matter how sluggish it is. So it truly has portability. It's also great if you want to throw it into your luggage when you travel, no matter what hotel you're staying in. They have anything resembling a wireless access point. You will have over 16,000 things to listen to, which is nice. On the other hand, if you prefer to use it with an Ethernet cable, there is a jack for that. If you want to listen to it with headphones, they got a headphone jack. If you want to take the audio and use a recorder, maybe save it for later to listen to something like the CC Witness, you can do that because they've got audio out and so much more. It is just the best way to hear, well, your favorite conspiracies, of course, but whatever news in which you have an interest, you will find that it is on the internet, and you will find that with a Wi-Fi radio, it's on your radio. It's just terrific. Then again, if you just want to listen to your favorite East L.A. oldies, well, Northern Soul, anybody, beach music, it's all there. So from your favorite music to the news behind the news you aren't hearing on the news, it's all on the internet, and with a Wi-Fi radio, it puts it in a small portable radio. 16,000 things, just imagine it. Go to ccradio.com anytime, ccradio.com, or give them a call at 800-522-8863. That's 800-522-TUNE. It's the Sea Crane Company, and you remember to tell them that Raleigh sent you. And Sandy Gonzalez, thanks for joining us again. Good to have you.
Oh, well, thank you for your interest in this case.
I am fascinated by this for all the reasons that are out there in terms of how our government could possibly do this, number one. But number two, how you could wind up anything but a hero is just a travesty to me. So when we spoke last time, we started to get into it. But bottom line is you happened upon the information that, in fact, we had foreknowledge of murders and were paying an informant. When you first found that out, you had to be thinking, something's wrong. This can't really be happening.
Oh, well, absolutely. Well, the thing is, when I found out, it was clear that it had happened. So the thing at that point was to, I guess, to have an investigation into this matter.
And at that point, you had to think that it had to be relatively low level, that this wouldn't go all the way to the top. I mean, never in your wildest dreams would you think that the likes of Johnny Sutton would get backing from Washington.
That's right. It came not as a shock, but as a surprise. I had been involved in other issues previously, although not as serious as this one. So it was not a total shock.
Yeah, you had been in Miami, I know, and as far as I'm concerned, were a hero there as well. When you discovered that drugs were missing, you thought maybe somebody should know about this, and that caused you, what, a transfer to El Paso?
Yeah, that's correct. And, you know, I have a little problem with the word hero. As a law enforcement officer, I was just doing what I was supposed to do, and that's always been the way I looked at it.
What to me is heroic about it isn't the law enforcement part of it, Sandy. It's having the gumption and the guts to stand up to a system that you know in your heart on many levels is corrupt, and you've watched other people. You know that, you know, to quote some, no good will come of it when you try to do the right thing. So standing up for your values, while it is the right thing, there's a lot of people in government who do not have the courage to do that, even people who are not on the side of some of the horrendous things going on, but who would rather remain silent.
Well, you're correct. I mean, I have to agree with you on that one. It does happen quite often where people that are law enforcement officers just look the other way on serious matters.
And so here you were, you know, you had the experience from Miami knowing that, you know, maybe trying to do the right thing doesn't always pay off to your benefit, but you happen upon a case, this case, whereby a paid informant is, in fact, committing murders. So tell me about how you came to that discovery and what'd you do about it.
Well, I came to that discovery when I was notified that there had been that there was a threat against our agents in Ciudad Juarez, and I was asked to assist in their evacuation from that city. So we did that. I was in charge of the division in El Paso, and we assisted the agents with security, bringing them out, and then, of course, with the investigation that was conducted immediately afterwards, whenever there's a threat against a federal agent or a DEA agent, in this case, an investigation has to be initiated immediately to try to get to the bottom of it as soon as possible. And so that was done, and we quickly, perhaps not so quickly, it took several days, but we learned that this informant was involved, that there were a dozen or so bodies buried in this in the backyard of this house, and we slowly started getting the facts, and there came a point where when everything was kind of clear to me what had happened, I started asking questions, and when the answers were not satisfactory, I basically put it on paper and submitted a letter to the concerned parties, one of them being the United States Attorney for the Western District of Texas. Mm-hmm. And that's where my problems began.
With Johnny Sutton?
Correct.
Yes.
Mr. Sutton, upon receiving the letter, instead of calling me in for a meeting, calling myself in and my counterpart with Immigration and Customs Enforcement, he instead called Washington and complained, and I immediately was called and told to be quiet and not to talk to the media and not to write anything else about the matter.
Yeah, Sutton, I believe, called you hysterical, and then the threat, don't talk to the media. Now, that has to have your head spinning, because, again, what you had discovered was that a paid informant was, in fact, briefing the government on these killings, multiple killings. And so now you find out that Johnny Sutton's answer is saying, shut up.
Well, yes. In fact, there was documentation of the first murder that the way it was written up, it was the informant had supervised the murder but had not participated in it. So the first murder was clear.
Right.
The other murders, although we had an idea of what had taken place, of course, that had to be investigated to get to the bottom of it. And that's the investigation that has never taken place. Or, well, I shouldn't say that. There was a review conducted of the entire situation by personnel from DEA and ICE, but that review has been locked away. I don't know what they did with the key, but I was never shown the results of that review, and I was in charge of that whole area. The regional director for DEA in Mexico City was also never shown the results of that review, and they have refused to comply with several FOIA, Freedom of Information Act requests. I could not get it through discovery in my case, my discrimination case. So I suspect that the results of that review really show the ugly truth of what happened there.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about this is that, looking at it in the best way possible, this guy had foreknowledge and was witnessing a dozen murders that certainly, whether he could have prevented them or not, he was on the scene. That's the best it could be. The worst it could be is he's committing the murders himself. But the reality is, in any case, no one apparently who was his handler, dealing with him as an informant, did anything other than pay him.
It appears that's the case. In fact, the informant, when he gave a statement to a Mexican Attorney General representative, I believe he admitted to being present or participating in five of the 12 or 15 murders.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not clear whether, because I think 15 murders took place. 12 were buried. 12 bodies were buried in the house, and then three more people were killed on the streets of Juarez by these kidnappers. You know, that the people that were bringing the people into the house for torture sessions and later the murder.
Yeah, and by the way, we should mention that when we're talking murders here, there was nothing kind and gentle, not that there ever is with murder, but these were dubbed carne asadas, loosely barbecues. In some cases, they were immolating these people. They were setting them on fire.
Hmm. It was ugly. I mean, I don't know all the exact details of how each murder took place, but we did learn that that the authorities discovered 12 bodies in the house, and they were all they had all been tortured in some manner.
Right.
And these people were like the competition for that group of the cartel, either the competition or suspected informants or,
witnesses or turf wars or...
Right.
Yeah, right.
It's those types of people. But still, you know, what made the matters really bad was the fact that this informant was right in the thick of things, and we suspect... He was reporting this stuff.
Right. Right. So what we're saying is our government allowed a paid informant to participate in a series of murders, all except perhaps the first one, that absolutely could have been prevented. This guy was briefed every time. Now, Guillermo Ramirez is who he was, Lalo. What happened to him?
Well, it's kind of it's an interesting story because during that time, after the discovery of the bodies, he was protected to the nth degree by ICE and the U.S. Attorney's Office to the point that they would not allow DEA to question him. In fact, they didn't even allow the Mexican authorities to question him immediately.
Mm-hmm.
They did it eventually, several days or weeks later. and what really drives this thing home is the fact that when they eventually agreed to let DEA agents talk to this man, they placed a caveat on the interview, saying that we could not ask him anything that took place between, I think, July or August of 2003 and January of 2004 when the bodies were discovered.
Well, what else is there to talk about? That's exactly what you want to discuss.
Well, exactly, because that's where the key questions would be asked. You know, like how many times did you go there? What did you do afterwards? Who did you talk to, that kind of stuff, and that, you know, that sort of gave it away, in my mind, anyway.
Well, the thing that I wonder about, just from the get-go, is Johnny Sutton's reaction was so over the top in terms of threatening you not to talk to the media and basically do everything sort of short of, you know, calling you without your mental faculties. Right there, that tells me he had to be fully aware of what was going on.
Well, they were all aware, fully aware. And let me just go back for a minute to the issue of Lalo. They, like I said, they protected him at that point. Now, later on, eventually, they dumped him like a hot potato. And Lalo filed for asylum under the Convention Against Torture, because he argued that if you know, it became known that he was a government informant, and he argued to the immigration judge that if he went back to Mexico,
they'd kill him.
He would be killed.
Yeah.
And the immigration judge agreed with him and granted him asylum. And after that, the government came back and appealed that decision, and they're still, that case is still pending. It's gone around twice. In other words, the government is trying to get him deported,
right?
Where they know for a fact
he'll be killed.
He'll be killed, and this, in fact, has been the finding of an immigration judge,
right?
And you know, this is a matter where, I mean, it's really scary when you think about it.
It's on every
this
level.
Guy was a top-notch government informant. Then, you know, when they no longer have any need for him, then they turn around and they want to get him killed.
No, that's exactly right, because regardless of what a bad guy he may be, our government was allowing him to do it and rewarding him financially for doing it. And when they were done with him, or when it became too hot to handle, the idea that they would turn around and sentence him to death, which is what we're talking about here, should be a warning to anyone in any capacity who would ever think of being an informant for this government.
Right. Well, I think the way you have to look at it is when he became a potential witness against government officials.
Right.
That's when things change dramatically.
Sure. And exactly. Exactly. There's a lot of people who would rather see him dead in this. And,
yes, because right now his value would be as a witness
against
in an official investigation as to what happened here in the House of Death, which, of course, is not happening.
Right, and they want to make sure that he's out of the picture before it ever would happen, if it ever got to that point.
Right, absolutely.
Which is, you know, even more despicable in terms of what we're talking about here. Now, the only person they probably wanted dead quicker than him was you, actually, and they couldn't kill you. So, you know, although I'm sure there were those who were ready to write your obit in one way or another. So we're going to pick it up right there with Sandy Gonzalez. LEOAC.net is a great place to start. I've got a link to that at Raleigh.net. And also, if you go to LEOAC.net, it'll take you to advocatescouncil.us, and you can read the infamous House of Death case right there, because while we're talking about it and talking about it in great detail, it takes a while for this to sink in, for you to realize just how corrupt and how wrong this is. But the important thing, as far as I'm concerned, is making sure that Sandy Gonzalez continues to be safe, and we will talk more about his story and the reward he didn't get for turning this in, and more. So the House of Death it is. Sandy Gonzalez, LEOAC.net, right here on the Raleigh James Show.
It's the Raleigh James Show.
The Raleigh James Show. You know, in Bobby Fuller did I Fought the Law. You think of it, of course, as the bad guys, the criminals, the perps fighting the law. But what you find out increasingly, no, it's honorable, just, and people with a lot of integrity like Sandy Gonzalez who are fighting the system. LEOAC.net is the website. And Sandy is working with these people for justice, not only, of course, in his own case, but for law enforcement everywhere. I think Sandy is executive vice president of that, but we've got a link at Raleigh.net as well. So what we have here is a case in the House of Death where perhaps had a DEA agent in Juarez not been targeted, either inadvertently or not, maybe this wouldn't have come to light in the first place. But while the agent is going, the investigation into that agent's potential kidnapping is going on, there's another investigation that has the smell of cover-up. Just horrendous there, and that's where we'll pick it up. And you know, when we say Johnny Sutton, we've talked about him a lot, the atrocities of the Ramos and Compion trials. And on the one hand, you can say, well, with this Lalo person, this informant in the House of Death, they're just covering their own hide, so to speak. But then you say, well, wait a minute, there's a systemic pattern here that is not inuring to our country's benefit. What the heck is going on? And we'll find out from Sandy Gonzalez, and you'll go to leoac.net, I hope.
The Raleigh James Show.
All right, let me mention OIDA for a moment. If you are a commercial driver, I don't care if you're a company driver or an independent owner-operator, you know what it's like on the roads, and you know there's not a lot of forces working toward your benefit. There is one organization, OIDA, that has been around for over 35 years, and their only mission is to protect the rights and promote the betterment of the commercial driver, whether you're a company or you're an independent owner-operator. They got about 160,000 members, and their benefits are great. You're having problems with a company, they're the people who are probably going to jump in and fight, in fact, possibly file a lawsuit on your behalf. You're in the middle of nowhere, you got a problem, they're the people who will be there for you. You're looking for great discounts or great group insurance or what have you, they're there. And all that's terrific. But their major purpose, of course, is lobbying for your betterment, whether it is pleading with groups or whether it's pleading with lawmakers for legislation or the DOT for regulation. These are the folks who have your back. But you see, with 160,000 members, you get some respect. Your message is heard. Put a million members into this group, you can't be ignored. You are at the table. And that is a monumental difference. And that's what I'm looking for on your behalf as a commercial driver. And the only way to get there from one point to another is with a larger membership base. Nothing else will provide that kind of clout. And that's why one member at a time I ask you, please join OIDA. If you say Raleigh James, you pay $25. That's the whole deal, 6.8 cents a day for your first year dues. There's nobody who can't afford it. Prove me right. You know, people ask, well, what happens if another 10, 20,000 people join? You know, are they going to have that kind of clout? Frankly, probably not. You'll get some great benefits. You'll certainly get your money's worth and a lot more. But, as I say, you start looking at multiplying that membership exponentially, and you know, with 4 or 5 million drivers on the road, it's not far-fetched. Suddenly, there's a new form of respect. There's a seat at the table. You as a driver deserve that. OOIDA.com. There's a membership link. It says join or renew. Just click on that, and a form pops up, and you fill it out. That's it. Put Raleigh James in the promo code, $25 in the amount. You're done. You want to do the whole thing by phone, 800-444-5791, 800-444-5791. However you do it, join OIDA. It benefits you. It benefits every commercial driver on the road, and I appreciate it. So we're back to Sandy Gonzalez. So here you are, and now you know Johnny Sutton's not your friend. I assume you're still of the mind thinking when it gets higher up the food chain, this will be rectified.
Well, I was hoping that would be the case, but I soon found out otherwise when I got calls from my bosses in the headquarters. And you know, I think it's key for your listeners to understand here that this may very well be one of the biggest law enforcement cover-ups in history.
Agreed.
And why do I say that? Well, this was briefed to the Attorney General. We know that because people testified under oath to that fact during the trial, during my discrimination trial in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
The second in command of DEA and I think the third in command of DEA testified that John Ashcroft had been fully briefed on this, as well as high officials in the Department of Homeland Security. I personally briefed the senior staff members of Senators Grassley and Leahy.
Mm-hmm.
In 2005, I went to Washington and spent about 3 hours with them, and I never heard back from them. So, you know, this is serious, and more people don't know about it because I believe the mainstream media is engaged in the cover up also, because how the major media outlets have not covered this is beyond me, and you know, I just.
Well,
really bizarre.
Right. It's an explosive story. It clearly is a ratings getter. But much like what you're discovering, it is a pattern of deception. It is unfortunately not an isolated incident, though. By scope, the implications of this are beyond huge. But I understand that when you were talking with the staff of Grassley and Leahy, is one of the staff members was a Justice Department officer on loan who was actually antagonistic to what you had to say.
Well, that's correct. In fact, she stated that she was an employee of the Executive Office of U.S. Attorneys, which means that she knew Sutton, and she, you know, I mean, she was part of the staff there. So I suspect that she went back and told whoever, I don't know if it was the senator or some other higher staffer. Probably told him that I was full of baloney, you know, because I don't understand how something of that magnitude can be briefed to a senator's staff and not even get a call back on it.
Right, right. You were a guy with a grudge. That's the way she made it out to be. And,
well, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, which you know, unfortunately, by this time, you're coming to expect this. Now, going back to Lalo's first deed, of course, we're talking about him working for Santillan, and the first murder was a childhood friend of Santillan, who turned out to be a rival later. But the interesting part of this is that Johnny Sutton had Santillan prosecuted for drug trafficking. However, the five murder charges against him were all dropped, and it turns out that all of them related to this house of death.
Yes. And there was a very good reason for him to do that. Had he gone ahead with the murder prosecutions, I'm sure Santillan's attorney would have taken it to trial, at which point the government had to
put Lalo
had
on
to
the
produce
stand.
Produce the informant as well as many other documents in discovery, which I'm sure they didn't produce. So the minute Lalo takes the stand and testifies to what he did, it's over. I mean, the case
right.
is over.
Right.
Right.
So
they had to do that.
Right.
They had to do that.
Right. So this further proves all the complicity. Now back to you. At this point, you're not listened to. I'm sure you started to realize that to this corrupt situation, you are at best a liability. What happened to you?
Well, I after some time, I just felt that my what was left of my career was in danger. I mean, I tried to get transferred out of El Paso,
mm-hmm.
and quickly became the only person I think in DEA history that asked for a transfer back to headquarters and didn't get it.
Okay.
yeah. Which that kind of told me something. You know, they're really mad at me.
Oh well, yeah, they're afraid of you.
And given the entire set of circumstances, you know, the relationships involved, the U.S. attorney and the White House and the attorney general at the time, Gonzalez, they had all been very close in Texas politics. I just figured it was the best thing for me was to pull the plug and retire early.
Yeah.
Because I was convinced they were going to do something.
I would agree with that assessment 100%. Now, you were able to successfully sue, however, for things that started in Miami, correct?
Yes, I did. I eventually filed a discrimination and retaliation lawsuit in federal court, and it went to trial in 2006, about a year after I retired.
Right. Now, is that over, or is the government still trying to appeal that?
No, that's over. Okay. That's over. The jury found in my favor. The government appealed the verdict, but eventually we settled.
Right, because that way they could admit to not doing anything wrong, or not admit to doing anything wrong, the way I should phrase that. And so here, you know, the interesting thing is if this was just you, even though this case is huge, Sandy, if this was just your story, maybe some people would say, well, there must be something more to it. But when it comes to Johnny Sutton, this is not an individual isolated incident. This is a pattern of behavior. The Ramos and Compeon thing is still unconscionable on every level. So you?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
yes.
You know, I remember when I read the transcripts of that case and I heard things that the judge said or that Sutton's assistant, that Deborah Kanoff woman, said. I was just incredulous that these things were even being alleged. And yet, you know, I mean, it's the kind of thing where you just shake your head and say, maybe I missed a paragraph here, and then you read it again and no, I got it. So you've had time to see now and to be apart from this pattern of behavior. What's really going on here?
I don't know. I mean, I personally have lost all confidence in government. This is, there's corruption everywhere. It's tough to, it's difficult to explain. I mean, these are people that took an oath, and it doesn't matter. It doesn't mean anything. And it's a scary situation. And most of the public, for the most part, is unaware that these things go on because the government is very good at keeping the lid on things. And unless we have aggressive media coverage, and you know the media, they pick and choose what they cover, you know, because if they had covered this case with half the coverage they gave to the Scooter Libby case,
right,
we would have had an investigation, we would have had a special prosecutor or something like that, but for some reason they don't, you know.
The myth of the free press is the greatest outrage in America right now. What should be the very thing that gets us what we need to keep our republic sound has lapsed completely. But apart from why this isn't coming out, which is a story unto itself, you start to look at the patterns of behavior, the Brugman case and then the Ramos and Compeon, and there have been others besides that, your situation and on. And the thing that I keep trying to think is, okay, well, what is it that Sutton and his ilk are gaining from this? What are they trying to do here? And by the way, this is said with the backdrop of a Supreme Court that has upheld civil forfeiture. So we've given them the kind of tools that completely tear the Constitution asunder. And my question is, I can't figure out their motivation. What are they getting out of it?
Power. You know, just the exercise of raw power. A federal prosecutor is one of the most powerful individuals in government.
Yes.
They have the power of freedom, life and death. I don't know. It's just they can pick and choose who they prosecute and who they don't prosecute.
Right, and they're prosecuting folks like Ramos and Compeon or Brugman, and they're vilifying folks like yourself, and yet you talk about that power. They could be prosecuting the hell out of the quote-unquote bad guys. There's no shortage of them. Mm-hmm. And so you wonder.
And when you add to that the lackadaisical or irresponsible attitude of the Congress, I mean, they don't conduct any oversight.
No.
Hell, they need oversight.
Yes.
Who oversees them?
Well, that's exactly
the
right.
Justice Department.
Yeah, they're our friend. And like I say, we're giving them increasing tools that, you know, tear the Constitution apart to, quote unquote, get us in the name of protecting us. And these are the people we need protection from.
I know.
this is a huge situation. And I share your outrage and frustration that the mainstream media doesn't seem to think this matters. But this is a pattern of behavior that even though, yeah, Johnny Sutton has resigned, the next Johnny Sutton will probably be no better. I mean, it's the system that is doing this. And
right. Not only that, he or she will be able to look back at this and say, well, he got away with that. Let me try it again.
Yeah, right. They got precedent. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And as time goes on, you're right. They become more emboldened by this. And this is something that if the Congress won't and the press won't, the average citizen has to stand up and demand accountability. So with that in mind, what can the average citizen do?
Well, the average citizen supposedly has access to their congressman or congressperson. And this is a good question to ask, you know, face-to-face, ask a congressman, hey, you know, what do you think of this?
Yeah.
And, well, you know what the answer is. I mean, no one can say that's okay, you know. They have to say something like, well, if that's true, that's outrageous or
right,
whatever.
Right, right. And the big if, that's right.
And then you go, well, do something about it.
Right, right. It's the always if. But or they'll just say, that, well, you're misinformed. You're listening to talk radio. That's not really happening. You know, that kind of thing. And the bottom line is there should be hearings into this because this is huge. And when I first read about, you know, an informant who had been committing murders with our blessing, I thought at the time, oh, well, come on, the lid on this is just got to blow sky high. And, of course, the exact opposite has happened. And I can't imagine you add that to the publicity that Ramos and Compion, thank God, have gotten, although it's still not enough. Brugman didn't get hardly any, and the other cases haven't. Who in their right mind with good intent would want to go be a Border Patrol agent or would want to join the DEA? That's suicide.
Well, you know, if people do a background on all of this, yeah. But listen, there's another thing that we haven't touched upon, and that is the only person that has been fired over this whole incident, and it happened recently, was one of the agents, one of the ICE agents, you know, one of the low people,
right.
The low man on the totem pole.
Right.
He got fired. Lalo's handler.
Okay.
So he's fighting his termination right now, you know, for obvious reasons. I mean, everybody knew what was going on. I mean, we have sworn affidavits from the civil case that was eventually got thrown out in court, where these people admit what happened and they knew about the first murder and they told their superiors in Washington. They even named an assistant deputy attorney general by name. He knew and he approved the continued use of this informant, you know, even after they knew that there had been a murder in the middle, you know, and it's all documented. This is not a hard case to investigate.
Right, right. And they'll settle with that low-level ICE guy because no way will they go on the stand when his lawyers can ask the questions about, wait a minute, you've approved this.
Yeah, well, I think you're right. I think he's going to go before the Merit Systems Protection Board, the civil service system, and he's entitled to a hearing, and it's a public hearing. So I doubt very much that public hearing would take place.
No. He's gonna, whatever he's asking for, they'll quietly write him a check, and he'll be muzzled from speaking. Yeah, you can.
But it's kind of ironic. It's kind of like, you know, the same thing that happened in that Abu Ghraib scandal. You know, they went after the sergeants and the corporals and, you know, whoever.
Of course. Just like they're doing in that flyover now for the fighter jet over the Statue of Liberty. It's always that way. Get the pee on.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm delighted that even though you're retired and your case was favorable, that you are serving with Law Enforcement Officers Advocate Council. I think that's tremendous because, unfortunately, there is no shortage of cases such as yours.
You're right. You know, we would, you know, represent, assist, support in any way, any law enforcement officer that's getting, let's say, shafted.
Yeah, exactly. Completely shafted. And
yeah.
So that is LEOAC.net. And it is a nonprofit, and so therefore donating it to it is a good idea as well. You know, for people who say, I don't know what else I can do, well, empowering one of the groups that is there fighting for the liberty of people who are in the middle of this is not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm. No, I appreciate you you mentioning that over the airwaves.
Yeah, absolutely, because many people feel powerless, and especially if they've called their congressional office a few times and gotten the kind of answers that they usually get. It's like, what can I do? Well, empower the people who are fighting on behalf of folks like yourself. Unfortunately, there will be no shortage of these cases in the future.
I'm afraid you're right.
And I hope we'll continue to talk because your insight will be invaluable. I'm sure you're going to hear a lot more. I'd like to say we'll talk after the House of Death is investigated, but I don't want to wait that long.
Well, it's my pleasure. Anytime.
All right, Sandy. Thanks for putting yourself on the line there. Very few people would do that. I know you say it's just in the line of duty, but no, most people in the line of duty would just shrug their shoulders and say, "Well, I'm not bringing this up." So, thank you for you know, that coming first. It's much appreciated.
Well, thank you for putting it on the air. It's necessary.
All right, we'll talk again. Thanks, Sandy.
All right. Good night. Okay,
so there you have it. The House of Death. Just. I'd say it's unbelievable, too believable. But again, when we're talking drugs and things like this, we have a Supreme Court that upholds things like civil forfeiture. So not only are we putting you know, law enforcement officers who have integrity in harm's way, we're putting every citizen in harm's way. For what? For a sham, a travesty. And speaking of shams and travesty, not sure you heard about the Supreme Court decision that came down with regard to the illegal immigrant and the identity theft case. I know, just giving you the parameters, you probably know where this is going. Joy had emailed, said, my head is going to explode. Oh, yeah, I'm right there with her. I was having a fit earlier, so we'll pick it up with that fit. We've also got James in South Carolina who testified about wasting Halliburton in front of Congress. Yeah, well, yeah, you want the definition of talking to yourself? I think you've just gotten it.
It's the Raleigh James Show.